Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The Disney vs. Disney Debates podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple. So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zane C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Hey, howdy, hey! My name is Miranda Selwyn. I'm your host today on Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. I'm trying out a new intro where I don't say the show name first.
I say,
hi, howdy, hey.
But you go full Toy Story.
No.
Yeah. Hey, howdy, hey.
Yeah. Is it working?
Yeah, it is, actually.
It is.
It's working.
At the table with me today, my co-hosts.
Julie Eisentrager.
It's me, KB.
It's KB, everybody.
I'm here.
And our special guest, repeat guest.
What?
Some random chick.
Whoa!
Yay! Hey,
pull
random
her up
chick.
The street.
Do you have a name, random chick?
My name is Aurelie Roque.
That's a beautiful name.
Sure.
Okay.
I legitimately love your name.
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
nice.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anytime awesome. You want to call me Aurelie, just go ahead and guess at it, because I've spent most of my 30-odd years of life going, anytime there's a pregnant pause and roll call, that's me. Yep. That, no,
but
just
me
even,
too.
Even try.
Me
try.
Too.
Oh, yeah, you get me. Yeah.
Julie.
You get Julie. I get.
I even.
Yeah, that's. I'm here. That's fine. Just keep going.
I remember it from the chick in Love Actually, which is very similar but not the same name.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that either. But we'll just brush past.
Yeah, which is.
Anywho, so normally at this juncture we would say, oh, Aurelie Roque, we don't know anything about you. Let's do a quiz and have Miranda sing a great song. Mm. But not today.
Not today.
We will have Miranda sing a great song.
Will we?
On the spot. Do it. Immediately. Do it.
There's no business like show business, is it?
That wasn't even Miranda.
That was amazing.
Ethel Merman stepped in.
Yeah, she's also not wrong. There is no business like show business.
I thought you were
going
to just change the lyrics to the song you always sing just to fit it in with what we're doing.
I thought you were going to say there's no Rayleigh like Rayleigh. But yeah.
Oh, that would have been better. If only we had the ability to like cut and go back.
No, they need the whole thing.
How do we do that?
No, not today. So you have
no time.
You have done the getting to know you quiz last time you were here.
Yes,
so
I
we're
did.
Not going to do it again.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah. Instead, we're going to go to the repeat guest format.
Okay. Which is what, Miranda?
Which is we're all going to cast you in a role in a show.
I'm just going to sit back, drink my tea and enjoy whatever you throw at me.
Okay.
I have two responses, which is played that or understandable.
Okay.
What if we throw you on real left field?
Then I won't have to think about it. Won't I?
Then I'll have to come up with a third response.
Okay, so maybe my third response should be explain.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Shall I begin?
If you wish.
I do wish.
Okay.
I shall cast thee, Aurelie Roque, in the role of Velma Kelly in Chicago.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it might have got played that.
No, not yet. Someday. I got a few years left.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good.
Dear Satan, if you are listening down there, selling my soul.
Stretching that still, all you need.
Well, yeah. Stretching that as well as my legs, because that will need to go up and over when I'm 40. Next person.
I can see you as Janet Vandegraaff in The Drowsy Chaperone.
Ooh.
Understandable. Have not played that role either. Maybe I have I've chosen the wrong words for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't take it back now.
I can't.
Come on, left
I think
field.
It comes down to, like, what do I want to hear Ray sing is what it comes down to. Left field.
Yeah, give us a left field, KB.
Sally and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Oh, no, okay. I'm going to give you an understandable on that one. I'm going to give you an understandable because she is funny.
She's funny.
She is strangely sassy, and she is not an adult, which I am also not an adult.
Right.
In my brain. I actually sang her song in one of my first cabaret shows in Kansas City, and I loved it. I fell in love with that character.
She's hilarious.
I saw her on Broadway.
What?
I did not realize that I saw
Kristen Chenoweth.
I didn't when I saw the show when I was much younger, plus some years ago. I
last year
went with I went with my dance troupe. So my dance troupe in Kansas City used to, and still does to this day, Miller Marley, what's up? I used to go to New York, and you would pay for this package deal. You'd see a certain amount of shows. Saw Chicago when I was 13, which at the time was a little too dark for
me.
But as I grew up, I went, I get that. Get that.
Understandable.
Understandable. But I did see, amongst a few other shows, Charlie Brown at one point.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize at the time, till I was going back through my playbills before I moved to Australia, that I saw the original cast.
That's amazing.
Of Charlie Brown. And have a few autographs. I don't remember who I have, because it's been years since I've been back home and actually looked at my myriad of playbills. But I did see the original cast, which means I did see Kristen Chenoweth.
That's
I don't exactly
awesome.
Remember that point, because we saw so many shows. We saw a show or two shows a day.
Whoa.
Part of the package, so.
That's how you got to do it.
That's how you got to do it.
But one there is a picture of me in front of the Charlie Brown poster, the big one out front of the building that I had, that my mom framed and put out somewhere. Again, just vagueness. My name is vague. Continue.
Well, then my left field fits perfectly.
Yeah, it does actually. Yeah.
And so I'm not going to say a legitimate answer. That's the end.
Oh, come on. I'll be surprised if your legitimate one throws me.
I think that you would sing the freaking pants off Elphaba. And I just want to hear you belt your face off for like 2 hours. But also, I love your cabarets. So really, it's just whatever role you want to play that you've put into a cabaret.
I'd like to see you in the role of Aurelie Rook.
I want to see it in.
That's going to take a minute. I need to do some research on that one. Now, if you want to hear, if you want to hear me belt my pants off, particularly in a wicked capacity, come see me at Doobop when Trevor Jones is doing his musical theater thing. Because on the first show, the first night that he did that, it was that idea. The idea remains that if you hear the song, you just kind of run up on stage and start singing it. I heard the intro and went, oh, I know this song, not thinking about what the actual song was or where it was from. And it was Defying Gravity from Wicked. So I ran up there and picked it up and realized I've stolen a solo from the guy who runs this thing. It's got a big belt at the end too.
Whoopsie.
Sorry.
But
I'm sure it went well.
Well, I had a glass of wine in hand, so for me it went great.
It went great.
Yeah. For everyone else, get their own answers.
Would you like to cast yourself in something?
Mm.
Well, we're doing it at the table, you know.
It only seems fair.
Take a turn.
There have been a few roles that I played, and I've been very blessed in the past year or 2 years to play roles that are very similar to me. So Susan in title of show, even the role I'm playing Miss Bell in Fame right now.
Yeah.
And she's a dance teacher. And that's not exactly me, but at the same time, I get to be super sarcastic. And that is very much
there's
me.
There's a few similarities I'm seeing there.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. If I were to cast myself in a role that is not necessarily me.
Glinda the Good Witch.
Look, I wasn't going to say it. But yeah, that's going to be probably the biggest challenge of my career is playing Glinda the Good Witch. I'll find a way to not make her dumb.
She isn't dumb.
Go ahead and cut that out of the podcast. I will find a way to not make her the typical Glinda. That's the reason why I was cast. I did not go for the usual Glinda type.
Yep.
And I'm super excited to play this role. But I'm so nervous because I've been playing Madam Peacock and Susan and a myriad of other roles in the past.
Sarcasm and sass.
Oh yeah. Well, all of Naughty Christmas and everything I've done for the past year or so has had a pretty strong semblance of me in it. So hashtag typecasting, but whatever. I'm ready to play something that I haven't played before.
Yay!
It's so, always more fun.
Yes, to answer your question is your answer.
Lucky that happens to be next up for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yours.
Yes.
Well, now that we know you even better than we did before, let's talk the show you've brought us today. What is that?
Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, my favorite.
It's a tale as old as time.
And also a song as old as rhyme.
What? Wow, that must be like so old.
You have no idea.
We're back. Did you enjoy that little piece of music?
Yeah,
it was really
fun. Oh, good. It's not from Beauty and the Beast, but we are going to talk about the Disney classic Beauty and the Beast transferred to the stage for fun and games and a whole lot more music, right? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That, you know what? We can just stop the podcast because you've nailed it.
You just nailed it. Well, thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks. Good night. Blackout.
I said that I would keep it short today. So what can you tell us about Beauty and the Beast? We want to hear all about it. Everything. Just
okay. Yeah. I'll try to keep this as short as possible. Yeah. It's a Disney musical. Thank you. Good night. That's a blackout. It was the first Disney Broadway musical, and it was okay. Can I give a bit of a story time from my aspect?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Please do.
I was waiting for you to go. No.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, story time with Aureli Roque.
Gather round, children. Gather around the fire. It was the first Broadway musical, which means for somebody that was obsessed with Disney and also obsessed with Broadway growing up, I remember walking into that theater as a semi-preteen and going, I remember the actual thought of Disney, stick to what you know. And from the moment the show started, I was on the edge of my seat. And the last time that had happened was the very first musical I saw, which was Phantom of the Opera, if you want to call that a musical. Everybody's got their opinion. But it blew my mind. Disney had one-upped Broadway at that time.
That's awesome.
Lion King was the next one to come. Mm-hmm. And of course, there have been quite a few Disney Broadway musicals that have failed, Tarzan in particular.
Tarzan.
Yeah, well, and Little Mermaid was never meant to really be on Broadway for that long before it could just go off. They really geared that to tour. That's a whole other podcast. This was their first foray. They went all out, as Disney always does. Mm. They made sure that they did their homework, which Disney almost always does, and it really paid off. They put songs into that show that were meant to be in the original musical, like the song Human Again.
Yeah.
I don't even need to look this up right now. I remember this. The song Human Again was supposed to be in the original movie, and they decided to cut it because it was not fluff, but they needed to continue the storyline. And it was just a bit of nothing. It didn't help in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Adding that into the musical brought out all of these amazing characters. And if we're going to even segue into costuming or lighting or design or set, it all worked so well in every aspect. Of course, Be Our Guest. Not just blows your mind, but blows your pants right off.
Wow. Isn't there usually like a lot of kids in the audience?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I remember. I remember distinctly that there was, there were all of, you know, all of the enchanted leads and the main characters on stage, and this lighting and design was just going crazy. And that was back before they really had a solid, crazy grasp on the cinematography of set of the platform of the set, so that it would, it could shift in a million different ways and raise up and lower. It did exist back then, but not to the extent that it did for Shrek or for Cursed Child, if we're talking about right now. Disney helped to create that.
Yeah.
They hired the people that make magician's tricks. And they were not the first ones to do that on Broadway, but they were one of the first ones to make that kind of like put that push into the Broadway set design. So, yeah, with Be Our Guest, it was all crazy. And I remember all of these characters in these amazing, elaborate costumes. I remember to my right, there was a cheese grater that was in the audience with us. It was a cheese grater. It was a fucking cheese grater.
Like,
but I remember
a dangerous
that.
Place to have a cheese grater. Like, of all of the things you're going to put in the audience.
Don't put children near cheese graters. Just in general, guys, let's never do that. But the idea that you were immersed, again, not the first time that's happened on Broadway, but I really felt it in that particular moment. The one that hit me the hardest, that took my absolute breath away, is, and we'll get to songs in a second, but The Beast has a song, and I won't go into it because we're going to get to that
it's
moment.
It's my favorite musical theater song.
I'm
of
just
all
going
time.
To say right now, and even if this is cut into the song section, I'm fine with that. I'm so upset with the fact that that song was not in the movie.
Oh, me don't. Too. When, don't even get me started.
Yeah,
don't get me started. And I'm enraged. And someone was like, oh, but they put in a different. I'm like, but no. There's another
they
song.
They put in the wrong one.
It was not as good.
And they just put in a little good song. Disney.
In the Broadway musical, he starts this song. He starts the song in the castle as she's leaving. And he walks out a door and the whole set shifts so that he is out on a second floor patio on this balcony. And all of a sudden I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. All of a sudden these stars come out of nowhere and you feel like you're right there with him as he's singing this song. And I mean, look at me. Seriously, do you see those?
Yeah.
I have goosebumps, and I was a teenager. I was like 13 when this came out, when I saw it, and it blew my mind. That singular moment blew my mind. I remember as a kid and watching the movie and being in love with the fact that Belle, she's French, she loves to read, she's got dark hair. Oh my God, she's me.
Oh wow, my God. That what? We didn't cast her really as Belle, guys.
Why didn't we
take
that?
It back. Look, everything we said
we'll
was
get,
a lie.
We'll get to the reason why that's very okay in a second. But at the time, I realized, like, it's not about Belle. It's not really about even the Enchanted Lee. It's about this poor man who learned his lesson so many years ago, but he's never had a chance to
right the wrong.
Exactly. And he can't right the wrong without the right person.
Mm.
And how bonkers is that? Oh, what a horrible curse. So anyway, Broadway. Disney,
Broadway.
Beauty and the Beast.
So Disney started this thing with Beauty and the Beast that they went on to do with a lot of other shows.
Oh, and they ran with it too.
Will continue to for
yes.
a long time.
A long, long time.
They're now writing movies with the upfront intention to transfer them as soon as possible to Broadway. Like Frozen, that happened so quickly.
Oh, I know.
Because it was written for stage but released on film first.
Well, they really were pushing for the rights to Anastasia from Warner Brothers for so many years. And then the moment they got them, all of a sudden it's on Broadway. How all of a sudden?
What?
Guys, I have problems with Anastasia though, but that's a whole new podcast.
Anastasia episode another time.
Don't get me wrong, there are some great parts to it, but
there are some great
solid.
Parts
issues. Yeah, question.
Well, we'll bring you back, some questions.
We'll bring you back.
I'm going to raise my hand now because I've got some questions in class.
So the thing that they started with this that they continued to do was innovate the technology to make something more impressive than what they can do with animation on the films. And this was the thing that I vaguely remember. I mean, I was young too, not quite as young as you, darling, but when Beauty and the Beast first transferred, first, you know, opened, they were talking about doing it on stage. Everyone was saying, well, how can you do it on stage? You can't do that. You can make the Catherine dance.
Nobody believed
it. You can't do it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. That's why it was an animated film, because you can't make real people do that.
No.
And then they went with the most magical.
They went with the most magical, like as in literally magical of all of their stories.
Yeah.
And they took that and went,
Let's make magic. That's Disney's thing.
Yeah.
They take life and they make it magic. That's entirely their thing.
Yeah. They take that mantra double dog Disney. Dare and they say, oh, I'll take that.
I'll do it.
I'll do it and run. Watch me.
So, but the advancement of the technology that went into this, they took to all the other shows, but the rest of Broadway also benefited from that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that at least they contributed back.
Absolutely.
The shows ran forever.
There's also a rumor. I don't know how true it is because I haven't researched it. So sorry, guys, if this is wrong. But that this Disney's takeover of Broadway was kind of the catalyst for Jonathan Larson to write Rent. Sorry, Jules. I said it. I said the naughty word on the podcast.
You said the four-letter word.
I know. But because Disney was trying to create a family-friendly street for their theater to bring Beauty and the Beast in, they went to the mayor and the mayor went, you know what? I will take care of the fact that this rundown theater has a lot of homeless people, a lot of like peeps living in it. We'll clean the streets up. And instead of actually helping them, they just moved them along. And so people got a little sad and angry. Not technically Disney's fault.
Magic, Julie.
Not technically Disney's fault.
Yes, magic.
But I find that really interesting for I love Disney. Beauty and the Beast is one of my favorite Disney films. I too was like, I want to be Belle. There's this kind of darkish side to them bringing
to life. Corporate Disney is another thing. Let's not spend this episode talking about that. That is an entirely different
podcast. Not even this podcast. That's a whole other type of podcast.
Super quick, because we don't want to run too long.
Right.
Awards, accolades.
Oh, there were a few.
Blitz It, Best Musical, Tonys.
Best Costume Design.
Surely. Technical Achievement.
Hang on, let me check my references here.
Scroll.
Nominations. Nominated for so many. This was 94. God, I feel so old.
So 1994.
It was nominated for Best Musical, Best Book of a Musical, Best Original Score.
For all the biggies.
Nominated, yeah. Best Performance by a Leading Actor, Leading Actress, Featured Actress.
Gary Beach.
Direction of a Musical. It only won for one in 94. Costume design.
Well.
Which makes sense. That actually makes sense.
Drama desk, similar story, lots of noms, no wins.
No. And it was also.
How did it not win
Tony
for music?
Lighting.
Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, and Tim Rice.
Maybe it was just too much. People were like too.
It's too much goodness. I don't know where to put it.
And here's the infuriating thing. So they also were nominated for a myriad of drama desks, including a lot of the same outstanding musical, actor, actress, featured actor, choreography, orchestration, lyrics, music, sound design, special effects. Won none of them.
Wow.
It won one Laurence Olivier. Best musical.
Best musical in
good
London.
Work.
Yes.
London.
In 98. That was 4 years later.
Wow.
And it was only nominated for three at the time. Who wrote the book?
So we had all those big names on music, Menken, Ashman, and Rice.
And Rice, yeah.
Extra songs by same guys?
I believe they were all done by those three.
Because they took them from the original writing for the movie.
Yeah.
Book by Linda Wolverton. That name is familiar.
She's probably done some others.
We're going to investigate that while you listen to this brief musical interlude. Okay, so we checked it out, and now I'm embarrassed that I didn't know who Linda Wolverton was.
I was saying.
She wrote the original concept for Beauty and the Beast. She wrote a screenplay for Beauty and the Beast, and she adapted it for the stage.
Well, she was also the first woman to write an animated feature for a studio, period.
That's amazing.
Or no, for the studio, for the Disney studio, sorry.
And then later, the first woman to have the sole writing credit on a billion-dollar film. She wrote Alice in Wonderland, which Tim Burton directed, went on to do Maleficent. She's like, oh my gosh, a lot of talent there. It's a shame you don't hear more about writers.
I know.
Anyway, that's wasn't what we're here for.
Wasn't there a whole like protest for writers?
Writers. Anyway, but we're going to talk about what writers do, which is write stories.
They do write stories.
Who's going to tell us about the plot?
Me.
KB.
It's me, KB. I'm so glad the catchphrase is
What
back,
happens
guys.
In Beauty and the Beast? I'm sure no one knows.
Okay, guys.
So there's an old woman with a flower. No.
There is an old
there's
woman.
There's an old
with
woman with an apple. No.
No. With a flower. You so were right.
Two sisters that just rely on each other. Or is that glass menagerie? I think I'm mixing them up.
3 hours later.
Producer Zane is so upset that we're stressing. Taking such a long time. Sorry, it's a really good show.
Miranda.
Shh.
So,
can't stop talking.
Beauty and the Beast. If you don't know the plot, please do not watch the latest film. Go back and watch the cartoon.
Oh, preach, honey, preach.
I will tell you right now what happened. So spoilers, if you haven't seen it, I'm very disappointed in you. So the movie / musical opens with an old beggar woman knocks on the door of this castle. We don't know where we are. It's some beautiful overture.
Surely with the background noises.
She knocks on the door. The prince is having a party. He opens the door and he's like, what do you want? And she's like, I just want some shelter and someone to be nice to me.
I just want some shelter, please.
Please, sir. May
the
I have some shelter?
Accent really downplays the importance of, just want some shelter. Please, sir, may I have some more?
Please, please. And he says, nah, you're too ugly. Please go away. I'm having a party.
I'm having a party. You weren't
you're
invited.
You're going to ruin the aesthetic.
Icky, no.
And she says, please, just let me inside. I won't bother you. You won't know. I just want something to eat.
I has flour.
I have
you
a
like
flour.
Flour.
Would you like? I will pay you with this flour. And he laughs at her and closes the door. Turns out she's an enchantress, guys.
Dun, dun, dun.
And because he could only see the shallow level, the surface level of her as a human being, she curses him and all of the servants in his castle to be inanimate objects like clocks and candlesticks.
To be what they are shallowly are.
Yes. What all everyone is on the surface. And the prince turns into a beast.
Bum, bum, bum.
Then we fast forward 10 years. It was real quick. And we meet a girl called Belle. The town that she lives in
is a little town.
Is a little
it's a quiet
town.
Village.
It's a quiet village. And every
day
is like
the
one
before.
And she is outcast, essentially, because she doesn't conform to the norm of the town. She's a little bit quirky. She likes to read. She doesn't really socialize to the same degree as the other people in the town. She doesn't follow the
social norms.
How do you describe Gaston? Like
douche.
The dude.
Frost
the town
and Tips
dude.
With the rhinestone. If it was the 90s.
She's already feeling a little out of it. Gaston decides that she's the girl he wants to marry. And that's cool for him. His sidekick and him decide that they're gonna work on Belle. Keep asking her out. And eventually she'll say yes, right, guys?
Yeah.
That's the way that works.
Nine no's and a yes still means yes.
Belle on this particular day says no again. Goes back to talk to her dad, who's about to go to an invention convention, is what I like to call it. An invention convention where he takes his wares and he shows people what he can do.
She gives him a scarf. He goes out into the woods and she continues along on her merry way because that's normal life until Gaston's sidekick, LeFou, comes back wearing her dad's scarf.
Dun, dun, dun.
What? But what's happened to Maurice, guys? Well,
Maurice.
He has been – oh, wait, where are we in the musical? Nope, that's right. I'm right. We're yeah, back. We're somewhere. Totally fine. So Maurice, he gets where
attacked
are
by
we?
Wolves is what happens.
Yeah, so he gets attacked by wolves. He tries to find shelter, but the only place is this weird castle in the woods. So
and
he
he's
knocks
like,
on
I'll
the door.
Take it.
And he essentially gets put into the castle dungeon when the beast decides that he's overstayed his welcome slash nobody should be in the castle yeah. because he's a beast and he hates people. Belle, when she realizes that Maurice is missing, goes into the woods to find him, discovers the castle, finds her dad. The catch, though, is the beast finds out that she's there, is super mad that she's trying to break out a prisoner. And she goes, you know what? I'll swap places with my dad. He shouldn't be in here. He can't. He's old. He won't survive in the cold dungeon. I will take his place. And Maurice says, no, I'm the dad. I'm the one. This is my responsibility. You go save yourself.
My feelings on that is always like, I feel like that's an empty offer there, Dad.
Yeah.
I'm sus on you, Maurice.
Bit sketchy.
But Belle ends up taking his place. Maurice is sent back to the village and Belle is put into the dungeon. Lumiere and Cogsworth, who are the candlestick and the clock, talk to the beast and be like, oh, it's come on now. They know, they've figured it out already that it's a girl in the castle and maybe she will break this curse. That is, that he must find someone to fall in love with him, who he is, not what he is on the outside, but who he is on the inside. And they're trying to coerce him in some way to maybe be a little bit more inviting, warm, welcoming. So they tell him to pop her into a bedroom. They have several of them. They're in a castle. There's
this
no people there.
Fairy tales.
Pop her in.
Pop her in, where she meets a wardrobe that can talk. It's all very much. Julie, you'll know a little bit more of her.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
I do.
Madame de la Grande Bouche.
De la Grande Bouche. Do you like to know what that means?
Yes, I would.
Madame de la Grande Bouche means the woman with the big mouth.
Oh, poor madame. Oh.
I'd say typecast, but I don't know.
Well, particularly. And it was Audra McDonald, which we'll get to in a minute. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be Grande Bouche. That'd be the big voice, not the big mouth. Yeah. All right. We'll get back to that.
Well, so Belle's in the guest room. The beast has invited her to dinner. She's mourning the loss of her life and her family. And Madame and Mrs. Potts try to cheer her up and are like, it's okay. We'll put you in a pretty outfit and you'll go to dinner and everything will be fine.
Take off that silly blue dress and put on this yellow one.
This beautiful pink one.
Oh, it's a pink one.
It's a pink one. It's a pink one first.
Oh, the yellow one's later.
Homage to Aurora.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
On my nose or Disney.
Okay. Yeah.
And then into the golden gown. It's as bright as the sun. Just call
it
yellow.
It's very bright. So Maurice has gone back to the town. Gaston's a little bit sulky because Belle's rejected him again. I mean, he should know this.
A little bit sulky.
He's just a little bit man sulky, which is Gaston a lot.
Way.
It's dramatic. It's really dramatic.
Thank God for LeFou.
Thank goodness for LeFou.
I don't think I need to explain what that means in English, right? LeFou? The fool? Really?
Yeah, I didn't know.
All right, all right. I just kind of assumed.
That people know.
People knew what it was.
they sing a big number about how great he is and that cheers him up.
Banger.
Yeah.
Love it.
I will say that number was pretty epic and the dance routine. Holy
it's
amazing.
It's definitely a big ensemble deal. It's real fun.
With the German steins clacking and a lot of high kick. That had the kick line. That was the kick line number of Beating the Beast.
That's
aside
awesome.
From Be Our Guest at one point, there is one where the dishes do one, but you're like, nah, screw you. I want to see the weird French kids in the village.
More shine. So while they're in the tavern, Maurice runs back in and is like, there's a beast and he's captured Belle. And everyone's like, oh, crazy old Maurice. He doesn't know what he's talking about, does he?
Crazy old Maurice.
Gaston decides that he's going to use this to his advantage to win Belle. We go back to the castle. Belle is definitely not going to dinner. Cogsworth and Lumiere tell the Beast. He gets super mad and he's like, if you're not going to eat with me, you're not going to eat at all. And forbids Rude. Her.
How very dare
to,
he.
Yeah, forbids her from enjoying a meal even if it's on her own. So when she knows that she's not going to get caught, she sneaks down to the kitchen. She looks for some food. They sing a big number about eating. No?
Yeah.
What is it?
Be our guest.
Oh, is that her sneaking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The things you miss when you're backstage and not paying attention.
When you're just trying to sneak into the kitchen, just like creep the door of the fridge open and just have a little snack. And then like an entire ensemble comes out and sings a huge dance number.
Really blows your cover. Yeah.
That's the whole joke of Cogsworth going, all right, glass of water, crust of bread, and then send her back. And Lumiere going, no.
She's
out guest. If you pay attention, she doesn't eat anything.
No.
She eats nothing because they're so immersed with presenting her with all the food that all the food goes by too fast and she doesn't eat any of it.
I love it.
That's like Alice in Wonderland.
It is, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
So then after dinner, Cogsworth and Lumiere give her a tour of the castle. Naturally, she's drawn to the dark, forbidden part that they're like, oh, no, not the West Wing. Do not go into the West Wing.
There is no West Wing.
It doesn't exist.
It's a Jedi mind trick.
But she sneaks away from them as they're too busy giving their tour
She's a sneaky little girl.
She goes into the Beast.
She's defiant.
Chamber. Of secrets, I guess. She sees
and fights a basilisk.
Yeah.
How do we always come back to Harry Potter? How is that?
Because we're big nerds,
Harry.
And she is mesmerized by this floating robes in this beautiful vase deal. Until she's caught by the Beast, and she runs from the castle because he's so mad. And he knows that he's done. He's like, oh, damn, that's it. We're on like one of the last pedals.
Now I've done it.
We're never going to break this curse. Yeah. End of act one.
I scared a chick away. Why do I keep doing that?
How do I not?
Oh, my God.
This is a mammoth show, guys. So act two opens.
I'm only in my early 20s. I feel like I'm dying.
Well, this is the thing. Like, he's frozen in time, kind of, I guess. Like, 10 years.
Depends on perception, because everybody's got their own opinion on how that actually plays out.
Yeah. It's always the human beast is always played by someone very young, though. So I'm like, was he 8 years old when he opened the door and he turned the beggar woman away?
Yeah, because that means Chip would have. How did that happen?
Well, I have a theory on this.
Yeah.
Do we have time for that or do we need to come back to that? Okay.
Wait, this is intermission, guys. We'll come back to act two in a second.
There is actually a book that I read called As Old as Time, A Twisted Tale, and it is part of the Disney canon, part of the Disney Beauty and the Beast canon. And it states that, or it's a novel about how Belle's mom, that we never hear about, is the witch that cast the curse on the castle. And how she was snatched away, and how what happens in the castle and the people in the castle, they forget people outside of the castle, and they are kind of stuck in time and to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Things kind of slow down for them. So it's not like Sleeping Beauty where hundreds of years go by.
No.
The people in the, because you always wonder, how do the people in the village not remember that there is this castle just like right there?
Full of people
who
presumably
they knew. The curse reached out to the village, guys.
And so it plays into, so some of the people that are in the village do or did know and were either married to or related to in some way, shape, or form, the people that lived in the castle. The curse that she lays on the family, the royal family, as well as the castle, spreads out to people that had any association to it. Because it had to do with the discrimination about people that had a magical tendency, whether they were fairies or centaurs or anything along those lines, there is kind of an uprising in that town. So the small town that Belle is a part of is the offshoot of the people that had left that town before she laid a curse on the family.
Oh, Disney, got it all thought out, don't you?
So confusing, though.
I know, it is. It's wild.
So we've got a town full of people who don't remember that there's a castle and they're just on their outskirts waiting to be found and for a curse to be broken. What are you doing? What are you doing? Anyway, Act 2. Act 2 opens with Belle being attacked by wolves. So she's fled the castle at the end of Act 1. The beast is gone. What have I done? But now she's in the woods. She's been attacked by wolves and the beast comes out because he's like gone after her, being like, I've made a mistake.
Well, again, can I just quickly say that the wolf fight scene is the Rodgers and Hammerstein's version of a bad ballet sequence. It was awkward to watch, and it just basically was like, we're changing the set backstage. Everybody just be calm and take a moment. Get a drink if you need. We're just going to do some dancing on stage and some stuff's going to happen. Okay, as it were. And we're back.
Hey!
And scene.
So the beast has been injured. Belle helps him back to the castle. She looks after him. She nurses him back to health. And in that time, they become friends. Or they start at least accepting one another's presence in their lives, I guess.
Well, who'd have thought?
I know.
Well, bless my soul.
Look at that. Any more lyrics?
Well, Lou, indeed.
The Beast introduces Belle to his giant library, which I would one day like to have in my own home.
I think we can all safely say we are jealous of his library.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the library.
And there's no innuendo there. We are waiting for that library someday.
It's really cute. They start becoming closer. She teaches him how to read. He's like super, like kind of dorky, I guess. You kind of see a different side of his personality, and she can see that that's changing, and the servants can see that it's changing. And then Belle asks the beast to dinner.
Whoa.
Back in the town, Gaston is like, do you know what? We're going to put crazy old Maurice in an asylum. That's a good idea. So he meets with some real shady asylum owner, and they plan to lock Maurice away and use that to blackmail Belle into marrying Gaston, because that's always worked out for everyone.
Yep. I think that's my dream proposal.
So then the Beast and Belle have their dinner. They go to a ball. There's a big golden dress and a beast in a really nice suit for a beast. And he plans to tell Belle that he loves her, but he asks Belle if she's happy here. And she says yes, but that she misses her dad. And so he gives her his magic mirror to let her see her dad, and finds him being locked away sees that Maurice, read my notes, that Maurice is not in a good place and that she needs to go to him as soon as possible. And he knows that although that the curse is coming to its end and that he might never break the curse, he lets her go.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to the best song ever as the last.
If I heard it at this very moment, I'd probably start crying because it's just so sad.
And Belle's not like totally okay with going either, but she knows that that's where she needs to be. So she finds her father she explains that the beast hasn't kept her in captivity this whole time, that she's actually maybe kind of in love with him. Gaston comes to take Maurice away, and Belle is like, no, the beast is real. Look into this magic mirror that nobody questions, and shows the beast. And Gaston turns the angry mob from trying to put Maurice in an asylum into going after the beast and taking down the peeps in the castle.
An angry mob. I mean,
an angry mob.
Zane's favorite thing.
Yeah. basically.
Belle the whole time is
like,
tell
Zane. Don't tell Zane about the angry mob.
There's no angry mob, Zane. I don't know what you're talking about.
Belle's like, don't do anything to the beast. He's actually really kind and gentle. He's not going to hurt anyone. Please, please, please. They don't listen. They go to the castle.
Kill the servants. Oh, the most epic of dance fight scenes that have ever happened. God, that's fun.
With very limited movement.
Very true. And it worked just as well on stage as it did in the movie.
Mm.
I really enjoy it. Not the most recent one, the animated one. Come on, people.
The real one. The real one.
The real one. Not the real, real one, but the real, you
the
know.
The real one. The servants are trying to keep the castle safe. They're trying to keep the mob at bay. The mob break in and a massive fight scene breaks out where the servants ultimately win, even though they are like candlesticks and clocks and feather dusters.
It's the best kind of winning.
It's the best kind of winning. Gaston has taken on the beast. One-on-one. So he's gone up to find him and they have a little scuffle, don't they? A bit of a scuffle.
Pretty big scuffle.
Pretty big scuffle where you think maybe the beast is going to maybe not survive, and then Gaston falls off the top of a castle.
In a very scar moment.
But not
homage
before
to another Disney movie.
Not before he stabs the beast,
just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a small stab. It's just basically like a razor cut,
just a flesh wound.
Yeah, just a flesh wound.
Belle arrives. Well, she's kind of been there for the fight, but she gets to the beast side as he collapses to the ground.
Typical woman. Let the men do it all.
She begs him not to leave her, and that she cares a lot about her, that she loves him as he takes his final breath. And then a transformation takes place.
It sure does.
And the beast turns back into the prince. And they live. Basically, everyone turns back into a human then, not just the beast. Mm. Everybody in the castle. I assume that the curse is then lifted, and the people in the village also remember the people in the castle and all the fun things.
Yeah.
And they live happily ever after.
The end.
It's a big show, guys. You've done well. Oh. If you're still listening, well done. You get a prize, and that prize is the next segment.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay, so we're going to zip through the songs. The music in this is great. It's Disney classic. It's Ashman Menken at his finest with a little Tim Rice thrown in for good luck. It's basically the music from the film, but they've added a bunch of instrumental segments, including my favorite, an overture.
Yes.
Well, there's a bit of action in that, but yes. Oh,
well, yes, but it's still, there's a prologue after that. There's an overture before the prologue.
Mm.
Yeah. And a couple of extra songs, as you mentioned before, raised some of them that were taken from, that were written for the movie, yep, but then cut and thrown back into the show, which is great.
Which is what led them to be okay to do that for musicals like Lion King and Aladdin.
Yeah. Fantastic. Wonderful. So Act One starts with the overture. It's followed by a prologue. The prologue does exist in the movie and goes straight into Belle. This is the Belle and the entire ensemble and one of the most famous numbers from the show, I think. That introduction with the silly girls and all of the whole storytelling and books and fountains and Gaston and
I need
every
six
character
eggs
in the show.
Favorite. That's too expensive.
Perfect.
Yes. Beautiful. So a lovely introduction of the town and most of the characters that we're going to see throughout the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. No Matter What. Sung by Maurice and Belle.
Backstreet Boys. No.
One Day.
That's a cute song.
It's a cute song.
I feel like that show did need that song. It helped to kind of
cement their
flesh
relationship.
Out the story. Yes, and cement the story between father and daughter.
Yeah, so this is one of the new songs that went in for the show. And it is followed by a reprise of No Matter What, surprise, surprise, and also the wolf chase music. That
the
goes
bad
with
ballet
Maurice,
sequence I think we've all discussed.
Maurice's wolf chase. Gaston and Belle sing Me, another new one put into the show.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
I don't even know what that one
that's
is.
That's the one where Gaston proposes to Belle.
And she says no over and over.
All your days with all your life.
It's almost
nearly all your life. My family tree.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
No, no one's as good as.
It's in the new movie.
It is.
Yeah. It is in the new movie.
And it was the version we did. Ill placed in that one. Mm-hmm. If you're going to not do some, don't do.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there's a little reprise of Belle followed by Home, the audition song loved by young girls everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Is this home?
And the worst song for any judge on an audition panel for quite a few years.
Yeah, we hear it a lot.
Here we go again.
Choose a different song. Home reprise, followed by everyone's favorite number, Gaston.
Yeah.
No one does everything like Gaston.
I loved the fact that they had LeFou not be able to spell his name at the end. G-A-S-T, sometimes one.
Very nice. That's a big fun number for the ensemble. Lots of dancing and hilarious lyrics. Gaston reprise with just so many reprises in there. How long must this go on by the Beast? This is another new one. Basically, the Beast gets songs.
Yes.
Which isn't the case.
It did not exist beforehand.
Yeah,
well, and that song is not reprised, but is influenced in the beginning of his song at the end of Act One, the one that I made reference to quite a few times. Mm. They do meant like that melody comes back, and
the
leads
theme,
into it is actually become the Beast theme. This this idea of again, how long must this go on into? Mm. I don't want to say the title because it just
you can say the title
into
it's
if I can't love her into if she can't love me.
Yeah.
Oh God. Oh God, I love that song.
He does go into If I Can't Love Her for the end of Act One, but just before that we get a huge ensemble number with lots of cutlery dancing in
Oh, what is
Be
that
Our
song?
Guest.
I feel like I know that one. It's just on the tip of my tongue.
Act Two starts with an entr'acte in the Wolf Chase. This is an orchestral number added in for the stage show, followed by Something There. Belle and the Beast sort of appear, but it's mostly the servants singing about them. Human Again. This is the number that you mentioned before. Lumiere, Mrs. Potts, Chip, Madame de la Grande Bouche.
De la Grande Bouche.
Babette, Cogsworth, and Ensemble. So this is all of the servants talking about being human again. That'd be nice.
Would be
it?
Nice.
Written for the original movie, but cut out of that timeline and put back into the show now. Maison de Lune. Another new one, Gaston LeFou.
Do you know what that means in French? Do you know what that, would you like to know?
Maison des Lunes, something about the moon.
It's the loony bin.
Oh.
The Maison des Lunes, it's the people, it's the house where crazy people go.
So this is Gaston LeFou talking about putting
Maurice
Belle's father
into
away.
The into the crazy house.
Coming up with the plot. The evil plot.
The evil plan.
And then we
also giving the guy who runs the Maison des Lunes just a little bit of a solo. Just a little hint of a character there.
He didn't quite make it into any other role, but
You looked like a Frollo. And so thank you so much for being a part of this musical. Thank you.
After that, right here in the middle of Act Two, we have Mrs. Potts' shining, beautiful moment singing Tell Us All This Tale.
Fun fact, my least favorite song on the show.
No.
I don't like it.
Oh,
I
think
I'm
it's a trigger for me. I will always tear up when I hear that song.
It's a beautiful song if you listen to it, but I just, It was that when the movie came out and the pop release of it ruined it for me.
Oh, right. Why did the 90s, can we just, I'm not even going to discuss it for very long, but the 90s ruined Disney post-credits. Thank God for post-credit scenes that just went, we don't need music anymore. Thank you so much.
We don't need some other pop star to re-record this to make it in air
so
quotes,
furious.
Better.
And now they're remaking the remakes of those songs, and I want to punch children.
Anyway, so Mrs. Potts sings Beauty and the Beast, and it's a very lovely moment while, you know, dancing and falling in love is happening. If I can't love her, reprise by the Beast.
If she can't love me.
Bells, is it? Okay.
No, that's the lyrics.
Oh, right, okay.
The reprise
change
is,
of lyrics,
yeah,
in that reprise.
If she can't love me.
Followed by Bells, A Change in Me, which was written into the show in 1998 for the debut of Toni Braxton and then stayed in the show.
Oh,
like, when did thanks. Toni Braxton play? Anyway, we'll leave that for somebody else to talk about. do you have Toni Braxton in your notes?
Probably.
Toni Braxton.
So. Somewhere anyway. In this novel that I have before me.
Yeah, I do.
She says.
98 to 99.
Then we have the home stretch, if you will. The mob song, Gaston and Ensemble.
Oh, the mob song.
The mob song.
Quick moment. If anybody remembers, there's one lyric in the mob song that if you stop for a second and go, what? Screw your courage to the sticking place.
Yeah.
Screw your courage to the sticking place.
Yeah, that's a saying.
Just
that's
need
a thing.
Why did Disney ever think that was okay? Okay, we're moving
Disney.
On.
Yeah, just lots of it's things.
Anyway,
you just screw stuff to sticky things. Screw them.
And then they've added in more instrumental and music into The Battle. Which I suppose is The Battle. Yep. Belle has a little reprise of Home. Then we have the final little duet and transformation. And then the entire company reprises Beauty and the Beast.
It's beautiful.
Huge orchestration, by the way. Three synthesizers, and so I would think, oh, well, you know, they've replaced instruments with synthesizers,
nope.
But they haven't. It's a full pit orchestra, including a harp.
Oh
yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, of
for
course
everyone.
A harp.
Yeah, you
of
can't,
course a
you
harp.
You can't do Beauty and the Beast without a harp.
It's a French fairy tale set somewhere around the Renaissance. Of course, you're gonna have a freaking harp.
Yeah, well, there is a harp, right? Calm down.
All right, okay. All right.
Whoa. Well, we all take a breather after the harp incident.
Harp.
Why don't you listen to this music? It's time to learn all about Toni Braxton and her long history in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, great.
As well as a few other people, just one or two.
Oh, yeah.
Let's start at the very beginning.
What a very good place to start.
Oh, I feel sick setting up for that. let's start with Bill, the original. Susan Egan. So she did some amazing things with Disney themselves, providing the voice for, I can't say it though.
Megara.
Thank you. In Hercules.
You're welcome.
And the voice of Rose Quartz on Steven Universe.
I just simply have to say I did not like her in this role at all. I thought that she looked the part, but she did not have the voice for it. She was an amazing Meg because Meg has that sarcastic tone. Just built into her.
Less so with Belle.
Belle is not sarcastic in any way, shape, or form, at least the way that I grew up knowing it. And so when I saw her on stage and then listened to the soundtrack, I was very put off by her. Going back as an adult and reading about what it took to get her there, yeah, I get that. She also was Meg after she was Belle.
Yeah, correct.
So the fact that she was cast in Belle is what led her to be Meg. And in a weird way, I'm depressingly okay with that.
But she's Belle all around, really.
Yeah.
And then our Beast was Terrence Mann. You'd know him from such things as Cats.
Oh,
Les Mis. Lots of things. Chorus Line. He played Larry in A Chorus Line. A role that I share with Terrence Mann. Our Maurice was Tom Bosley. He's known for playing Howard Cunningham. Happy
yes.
Days.
Amazing. Yeah.
I was hoping that would come up because I loved that.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Gaston was Burke Moses. Lumiere, friend of the show, Gary Beach. Mrs. Potts was Beth Fowler. Cogsworth, Heath Lamberts. And then maybe not a lot of big hitters after that, to be honest.
Wasn't Terrence Mann also in Addams Family?
I mean, take it up with Wiki.
Okay. I'm pretty sure, I could be very wrong here, but I'm pretty sure he was also Lurch in Adam's Family.
Potentially, yes. So notable Broadway cast replacements, and I've highlighted
my faves. Kerry Butler, 96 to 97.
Yeah. What?
Toni Braxton, 98 to 99, and she's also the first African American to play Belle on Broadway.
Yep.
Amazing.
Other people, other things, blah blah blah. A total of 17 actresses have played the part of Belle on Broadway.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. With Sarah Litzinger playing it for the longest. So she did 2000 to 2002, 2003, and 2006.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Busy, busy Belle.
Yeah.
Busy Belle. Some notable other replacements. Oh, Gaston.
Yeah, let's talk some Gastons.
The one that stood out to me for Gaston that I went, rot roll, Shaggy, was Donny Osmond in 2006.
In 2006? No.
And final Broadway performance. Yep.
How old was he when he did that?
I don't know. I don't have the clicky link, but he would have been pretty old. I don't know. And then another notable swap out would have been Chip in 2002 being Nick Jonas.
Aw, cute.
A Jonas brother?
Played
Are you
Chip.
Kidding me?
Played Chip.
Okay, I'm just going to – I'll just see myself at the door then.
So they cast
– come on.
They cast Chip as a child. Is it a child that plays Chip or a young adult?
In – I don't know. In 2002, Nick Jonas wasn't a baby, so –
Well, obviously they don't cast babies in the show, Julie. Obviously. That would be awkward.
Obviously. Anyway, let's – do we even – the movie.
Just do it real quick.
Right. Just like a Band-Aid. Just rip it off.
Emma Watson as Belle. No. Dan Stevens is the Beast. Luke Evans is
like
Gaston.
Dan Stevens.
Amazing Gaston.
Okay, Luke, yes, amazing Luke Gaston. Amazing LeFou.
Kevin Kline is Maurice.
Yeah, yes. He was
that
good.
Was good.
Yeah, he was good.
Josh Gad is LeFou. Great. Brilliant.
Yes.
Ewan McGregor is Lumiere.
Even he said, no, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. Stanley Tucci is Maestro Cadenza.
Okay, amazing, by the way. Amazing.
For that movie. Yeah.
Yes.
And then they changed the name of Madame de la Grande Bouche to Madame de Garderobe, which I'm assuming is wardrobe.
It is wardrobe, yes.
Audra McDonald.
Amazing.
Zane just threw his hands up in celebration. that's not a word I can say. A name I can say.
Do you want assistance?
Yeah.
Shall I?
For Plumet.
Plumet. Juju. Oh, no, this is a... Mbatawa, and also again her name, they changed her name from Babette to Plumet.
Yeah, just to be real obvious about things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an Ian McKellen is Cogsworth.
Amazing.
I hate it. Emma Thompson is Mrs. Potts.
Loved
her. Loved that too.
Yeah.
If anyone's gonna sing that song that's not the original, you know who she is.
Yeah. Yep. And then the 91 cartoon, Paige O'Hara as Belle. Great. Mm-hmm. Robbie Benson, Beast, Richard White, Gaston, Jerry Orbach as Lumiere. I've mentioned it before.
Oh, sorry. My heart still weeps for the loss of that man.
David Ogden Steers as Cogsworth and Angela Lansbury as Mrs. Potts.
Amazing.
Angela Lansbury.
Can we just say Jerry Orbach? What's his name again? Ogden Steers.
David
Ogden Steers and Angela Lansbury. Could I would have desperately loved to have been a fly on the wall if they had even been in the same room together, not as the characters.
Yeah.
That would have been phenomenal.
All right. So then the other very little used half of the segment.
Production elements. Production with elements. Julie Eisentrager.
Which is a hefty one for this show. So lighting and special effects. To pull directly from the wiki as I usually do. Beauty and the Beast didn't bring back theatre to New York, but it did change the dynamic, no question about it, and of the business. Known for assisting David Copperfield with his illusions, Roth hired Jim Steinmeier to work on Beauty and the Beast. Steinmeier had previously contributed to the musical Merlin, which I've never heard of.
I can very quickly tell you about some notable names in that. Mm-hmm. It was... Cheetah Rivera was in that.
Oh,
she was
wow.
an evil sorceress. Yes queen.
She was.
As well as newcomer Nathan Lane.
What?
And a very young Christian Slater.
Cool.
Oh, wow. That's hot.
Yeah
it was
real hot.
It opened in 1983 and it only had just under 199 performances with 69 previews. Phrasing.
Red hot go. Yeah. Really? So Jim, best friend Jim, assisted with things like the beast transformation sequence during the second act, and it took for lighting, special effects, and set to really come to fruition about 11 weeks for the set design.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he also, because of that, had a hand to play in Aladdin, I'm going to assume, the carpet ride. As well as Mary Poppins on stage. Mm. Both of those on stage.
Aladdin has all of those sequences in Friend Like Me as well.
Oh, yeah.
Tricks and business.
And they are so impressive too. When you can sit there as like a musical theatre person, and majority of musicals you go and see, you're like, I know what you're doing. I know there's a trap door there. Like, but then you go and you watch Aladdin and the carpet and you're like, oh, damn, this is magic.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Well, I've just discovered sitting here perusing that he received the Drama Desk nomination for his effects in Merlin, but also for his effects in Into the Woods.
The Rising of the Chair?
Dun, dun, dun.
Never mind. Okay.
So another big thing to make the animated film come to life, obviously the set, and they wanted it to be like a very much a literal interpretation of the film. However, just a bit tricky.
Mm?
The West Wing's appearance mirrors that like you can see the beast, but you can also see like the outside world through the same mirror, all that kind of shizniz. Took months and months to perfect.
Makes sense.
In a stark contrast to popular musicals like The Phantom and Into the Woods, the Beauty and the Beast set resembles a hybrid of Gothic Victorian and a Louis Quinez, I think.
How do you spell it?
Q-U-I-N-Z-E.
I think it's Quinz. Quinz, right?
That too. Yeah. And then you have on top of your lighting and your magic, you have the tricky task of making humans objects.
Well, and also not just having them just be the objects, but they become more like the object as the show
further
progresses.
Further into the show. And let me tell you.
And then at the end, they become human again.
It's heavy. Well, it's really heavy work, guys.
Guys. Carrying a wardrobe around.
It was real hard. I lost 5 kilos. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't use my arms. I couldn't do anything for myself. But the effort of getting in and out of it meant that I had to take on and off a wig. So that also seemed like too much effort. So I just decided to stay in it for 3 hours.
Do you know I actually was in Beauty and the Beast as well?
Crushed it.
I was in Babette. And it was an outdoor theater.
What?
In the summer.
Oh.
I'm hoping nobody is listening that had anything to do with the costume rental, but we had to lie to the costume rental company because they would not rent to us if they had known that we were an outdoor theater.
For good reason.
Was the only one that was one piece. Everybody else, all the enchanted leads, had a bunch of stuff or one thing that they could take off their top or take off their bottom. I couldn't do that. And it was long sleeved and it was feathers at the bottom and they all stuck to my legs and the June bugs were flying into my mouth, but it was still worth it and I loved that role and I'd play it again in a heartbeat, but I'm too old for it and let's move on.
I'd do it for a great diet, to be honest. 5 kilos just from sweat. It's great. So they hired a costume designer, Anne Hold Ward. Any relation?
No.
Oh, dang. She was tasked with, sorry, not what I wanted to say. At all. Yes, it was. I'm losing where I'm thinking.
We're all losing our minds.
Losing the plot over here.
Not from you,
just in general.
It's the second record, guys. So Disney encouraged Hold Ward to reference the animated film. So she also researched clothing worn throughout the late 18th century, and she spent a year discovering how household items looked during the mid-1700s. Howard Ward also visited Beauty and the Beast's original animators, spending a week learning how they created their characters to ensure that they would be very recognizable to the audience. It is a task. Like, the way to have people still move like humans but be trapped inside gigantic costumes took her months and months to perfect. Belle and the Beast costumes kind of paled in comparison to the difficulty of creating the enchanted objects. A combination of intricate wiring, prosthetics, and polytechnics were used.
Polytechnics for Lumiere alone.
Yeah.
Along the myriad of other times that fire and fireworks and stuff was necessary for
Scale was also a prominent obstacle for her to overcome. The problem was the presentation of an actor as a life-size teapot when the characters in the film were teeny, teeny, tiny. Because the castle's enchanted staff are slowly transforming into objects, as we said before, shown in various stages, they had to keep adding and adding to these costumes. Meanwhile, again, the costume of Lumiere with the pyrotechnics included was built by a team of 40 people, including a creator of the prosthetic candle, hair, and vacuum foam specialist, the polytechnician, a man responsible for equipping the costume with pyro unit and butane, and a man operating the butane tank were each separate people.
Wow.
One costume.
Hey.
This one I think that King Kong was complicated.
A system of wired frames was used to help support their characters' heavy garments, not used in community theatre, just put it out there. That was heavy work. And such elaborate costumes had never been designed for a Broadway show before. So Cogsworth's costume features a fully functioning clock on his face.
Meanwhile, why does it have to be fully functioning?
Because like, it's Disney and Broadway and magical.
When you have Disney money, you make a functioning clock
the whole time. On his face.
Is what? That what you just said?
Can you just imagine Cogsworth's the fact that costume. He could hear just the slight ticking that no one else could hear? And that had to have driven him crazy.
Cogsworth's costume features a fully functioning clock on his face. That's what it said.
Full stop. Next paragraph.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Madame Delagrange was the production's most expensive costume. Yeah, team. But yeah, it was insane. What they had to do to create
the biggest one, right? So just to have to build it all out and all the pieces move, all the drawers.
Yeah,
because
you did have to have drawers that opened, didn't you?
Yeah, and a cupboard that opened. It's intense. In short, it's intense.
In short.
So much.
My God.
But when you got Disney money, you can do what you want.
Yeah. You can do what you want.
Well, let's call Disney, ask him for some money.
Frozen man.
I just need like also what you spent on podcast. One costume in Beauty and the Beast. That's all. You'd want to think before recasting an actor, wouldn't you? Like, are you sure you can't just do it for a little while longer because the costume fits you?
Yeah.
Please. I'm begging you.
No.
Can you imagine
just make it again?
Bell would then, that's why maybe there was 17 Bells.
It's like, the only one they could change.
Yeah, sure, why not? Sure, no.
Oh, what about Gaston? Is literally no costume changes, right?
Yeah.
Or is it all just in like one big muscle thing and like we can actually resize the muscles underneath the costume. It should be fine.
Anyway, let's talk about Dreamcast and where we're going to put Zach in his Gaston costume.
How about that?
Beauty and the... Where are we putting everyone?
Are we talking about harmonies?
Casting. Okay. Come on, we need to do it super fast. Bam, 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 bam. Belle.
I wasn't thinking about.
No,
I was thinking
needs to be young and fresh and not.
Young and fresh and new. No one.
I'm going to throw a super wild card at you.
Okay. Yeah.
For Belle?
If she doesn't go epic belt, Barrett Wilbur Weed.
Oh, yeah.
I do not know this name.
She was Veronica and Heathers.
She's currently Janice in Mean Girls.
If she keeps it sweet, I'll give it to her.
She has a beautiful, gorgeous voice just in general, but everybody always casts her for the fact that she can belt without looking frustrated because nobody else can do that.
And also maybe Taylor Lautner from Mean Girls would be quite sweet, I think, because she always plays.
Okay, so the cast of Mean Girls can we'll share the role Belle. With Belle.
Yeah, they can rotate.
Or Jessica Mueller from Waitress.
Yeah.
Oh, Jessie Mueller.
I'd go that too. I said Jessica. I'm not her friend, so I call her Jessica.
Jessica Mueller.
Or Jessica Catherine McPhee, also from Waitress.
No, thank you.
I'd go with, again,
no,
anybody. No, no, you don't think
Vito.
So?
Jessie, go back
Vito.
To Jessie.
Selen Vito.
All right.
Beast.
I'm going to throw Jake Gyllenhaal into the mix of Beast.
I
He's a tiny beast. I think he would be
beastie.
Beautiful.
I'm going to give you a name that everyone's going to go, my God, yes. Ryan Reynolds.
Oh.
Sure.
Never mind. I thought I knew. Yes, he can. He can sing.
Ryan Reynolds can sing.
He doesn't sing because everybody knows him as a comedic persona.
I feel like that's probably, like, as like you look at Bradley Cooper, you look at even Jake Gyllenhaal, like all the movies that they've done or the stuff that you've seen them do in the lead up, Chris Evans, all phenomenal actors, but who have done these funny and shallow kind of roles to try and break the industry.
And I'm choosing Ryan not for the fact that he's funny, because we all know that Gaston does need to be kind of funny, but the fact that when Ryan Reynolds gets serious, it's scary.
Yeah.
Because you're not used to seeing
it.
You expect something else.
And it makes you stand up at attention and go, oh, this just got real.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with that. That's why I like that
Gaston and LeFou for me, I think I'd go Skylar Astin and Ben Platt, like bring the team back together. Just like, I think that would be really funny. They've already played that kind of dynamic before.
Okay. I want my Gaston to be Chris Pine.
Ooh. Let's just put all the Chris's in. Let's see.
All the Chris's.
Let's, Chris Hemsworth.
No, no Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth.
Pine. Chris Pratt. Where would he go?
All Cogsworth.
I would love to see Chris Pratt play LeFou, because he'd be the smartest, dumbest LeFou that has ever existed. And I'm going to put Josh Gad back in there, because have put him in there before the movie.
Yes, me too.
And so I don't just mean for the movie, I mean as in the musical. Yeah. I would have put him in as LeFou in the musical.
Yeah.
And I loved the fact that he was not the dumb one. He was smart. Way smarter than Gaston, which made him dumb, because why are you still with this guy? Oh, yeah, right, because you're gay. Sure. All right.
Layers.
Like onions.
Layers.
Unintentional Disney layers.
Can I also throw Andrew Reynolds in for Gaston?
Andrew said
what? Yes. You sure may.
Yeah, get the Reynolds Gad Chewer company back together.
And that makes the gays so much more fun.
Yeah.
So we've got Gaston LeFou. Who else do we need?
There's a few people, like even Mrs. Andrew Potts. Reynolds, I wouldn't be mad about seeing as Lumiere.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, he could do that too.
Yeah.
Totally.
There's a few people that we mentioned in Gaston that you could put in as Lumiere.
I think that there's such a weird fine line. It's distinct, but it's weird between Lumiere and Gaston. If they dip ever so slightly in like one direction or another, you either absolutely love them or you hate them.
That's right. Yeah.
I'd like to see Kristen Chenoweth as Madame the Wardrobe.
I was going to say Keala Settle.
Tiniest little wardrobe you've ever seen.
She's like, look how great I am.
She can't even hold the wardrobe.
Keala from Greatest Showman.
And Waitress. Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't talk about the question.
I had a name. I want to kind of see someone fun in Lumiere or Cogsworth. Like, I don't know, Bill Nye or something.
Oh,
like,
my God. Bill Nye is Cogsworth. I'm already on a plane.
Yeah.
I'm already on a plane.
I would also take Bill Nye. Oh, not Bill Nye. I mean, who's the guy from Love, actually?
Which one?
Bill Nye. That's Ben Nye.
Bill's in Love, actually. It's Bill Nye.
Ben Nye's the makeup. There's two Bill Nyes.
I want to see Bill Nye.
Which Bill Nye were you talking about? I was talking about the science guy.
She's talking about the rock guy.
Yeah, no, you're talking about the rock guy. Who are you talking about? Were you talking about the rock guy or you're talking about the science guy?
No, I'm talking about rock guy.
Oh, I was talking about the science guy. Bill Nye the science guy. Bill Nye the science guy was Cogsworth. I'm already on a plane.
Yeah.
And I'm going home.
So in that, I want Bill Nye as Maurice. Maurice.
But he'd be so like flippant.
Yeah, that's why. I want him to be like, he's kind of too good for the town flippant. And that's why he's so smart.
He'd be like, no, don't swap places with me. I don't want it.
And that's how I see Maurice. No, don't.
I love him so much.
Could John Barrowman do Lumiere?
Yes.
Is it the right kind of...
That is a delicious...
Yeah.
I would like to see, I know, like maybe if we just cast everyone a little bit older, John Barrowman as Gaston.
Oh, like 100%.
Well, let's be fair. He why looks
young. Keep him young. Yeah.
He looks young.
Yeah.
If you're listening, you know you are. Winky face.
What about Mrs. Potts?
I honestly, Potts that's such shit. A hard.
I don't, because I don't like the song, I don't care who plays it.
Do you know how what?
Could you?
Emma Thompson was a great cast.
Not again, no. No.
I think only, I don't know. Mrs. Potts is hard.
What about what?
That's sorry?
Who, Imelda Staunton.
Imelda Staunton.
Jennifer Saunders.
Jennifer
okay, you got yes,
voice
you nailed
in
it.
The sky.
Sorry,
Jennifer produces
us. Thank you, God, for that recommendation. Jennifer Saunders for the win.
Yeah, okay, done. I want to see it now. Wow.
I kind so of also want to see Joanna Lumley because I would love yeah. to see that.
Where did
not
we
the
put
combination.
Zach?
Where
see how
did we
play
put
it.
Zach?
Zach is the asylum.
We put him. We put him as the trash bin in the castle. That's where
oh,
we put him.
No. We just cast him as Monsieur Le Duc.
Or can he be the enchanted toilet? Monsieur can he be that too?
The random
insane asylum.
Also, I'd like to see Emily Blunt as Babette.
Oh, okay, you can see that.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, I'm vibing that. I'm vibing that.
And Kristen Bell.
Okay, well, we could,
Kristen Bell
we could
would
go
actually
on
be fun
forever,
too.
Yeah. But we can't actually go on forever because at some point we need to do top fives, do the lessons
oh.
we've learned,
oh,
and get
yeah.
home.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Yep. All right, fine.
So what have we learned from Beauty and the Beast? Obviously, this is a fable, as most Disney movies are. So what is the actual story?
I've lesson? Learned that I like to do top fives before I do lessons.
Oh.
We all have learned that in this
yeah.
semi-second.
So
I was just trying to get to the end.
Top fives for the bonus episode. We were just like throwing that away.
But. All right, fine. You don't want to change it up today. We'll do top fives first. Top fives quickly. Come on.
Top five.
You were so keen and now you've got nothing.
Costume designs.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay, good.
Top five movie to stage.
Top five magical elements.
Mm. Top five subtle female empowerment.
Mm.
Super subtle.
Super subtle.
Top five.
She does turn down the dude. I mean, that is a little bit obvious. I mean, they make a song out of it, but yeah.
Top five Disney.
Yes.
Yes.
On okay. stage.
Top five. Did we say we said magical?
Top
moments?
Five French fables.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Top five prosthetics. The whole beast face.
Top
guys.
Five special effects. Have we said that one yet? Special effects.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Give it that one.
Top five transformation scenes.
Yes.
That is fun.
Top five big ensemble number for Be Our Guest.
And that's one of our top five food songs.
Yes.
Ooh.
What about top five for having a majority of major ensemble kickline numbers?
Meaning
because they had Be Our
the
Guest, they had
them.
Human Again, they had Gaston, they had the opening number, they had the closing number, they had Beauty and the Beast, and everybody sang or was a part of in some major way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Mm, those numbers.
It. Top five non-human roles.
So many.
So many.
So many non-human
cats
roles.
And
Beauty and the Beast.
What about top five innovative for Broadway?
Yes.
Yes.
Putting a step forward towards stuff that now exists that didn't exist in the past.
Perfecto.
Yep. Mm. Oh, no, it's gone.
Okay, can we please keep that pause?
Sorry. Top five revived songs from a previous edition.
Mm.
Okay.
What's your Proud of Your Boy, I think, would definitely be on that list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
mostly
Proud
of Your Boy was more popular, which is interesting.
Yeah, but they're not putting it into the new movie either.
No, they didn't.
It's very sad.
But Human Proud Again did. Human yes. Again was in the new movie.
Mm.
Top five movies based off a musical based off a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by top five, we
screen
mean
to stage
you should never watch any of them.
Top five musical movies that made me mad. and top five uses of auto-tune for that movie.
Oh, yeah.
There should never be a top five for that. Huh? All those top five should
it's
be
a fiery
shot.
List from
let's
hell.
Move off. Let's move off the movie.
We're getting into sad, we're getting to sad top fives. These are low fives now.
For me, Belle's just on the top five Disney princess list. I have to put
yeah,
it on
but
there.
We were also born into a generation that was well. We were lucky enough to even by some of us, I'm saying we, lucky enough to remember like the Snow White era and the fact that Disney kind of got that leg up. And the 90s were so strong for Disney, and that was Lion King and Aladdin yeah. and Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid that really gave a Kickstarter for a lot of other things to happen.
Mm, yeah.
Well done, Disney. Like well you done, need Disney. A pat on the back.
Happiest place of on
applause
earth.
For you.
But most of all, thanks for bringing us the stage version of Beauty and the Beast. That was really awesome, Disney. Can we do lessons now, Julie?
Yes, we can.
Okay. With you. Do you want to listen to another bit of music? Or
yes,
we're just going to do it. But I, yeah. Okay. With Julie's permission, we will now do. The lessons we have learned.
Yay!
And Julie is very appreciative right now of that comment.
Yeah, no problem.
Very, she's loving it.
So it is a fable, as I was saying before. So what's Disney's message? Beasts inside
out,
something
no.
about like
Stockholm. No,
it's about
don't judge a book by its cover.
Judge a book.
I think Disney's take is look. Just because a grim fairy tale says it's this way doesn't mean you can't have your
Hold
own weird happy
phone.
Ending.
Yeah, take that, Grimm Brothers.
That's right.
Your name is Doc.
No need to cut your feet off in order to get the prince, or you know, have a fishtail. You do what you do. You do yeah. you.
Is
yeah.
that why there's so dreams. Many books in this? In this
oh,
story.
Doll. Yeah. Yeah. We've spoken a few times with Julie, haven't we, about yeah. a thing called a metaphor. sometimes things have different meanings.
Whoosh, right over the head. Symbolism. I think the word you're looking for is symbolism.
Symbolism. So there are other lessons that Beauty and the Beast has taught us, like how to carry the weight of a wardrobe while performing, right, Julie?
I am now well versed
in how to carry
in
wardrobe.
How to carry
in that practice.
The entire weight of a wardrobe on your shoulders with no help from anything.
Good
I
job.
Can do this on my
or
own.
Or anyone. Oh, no, there was plenty of help from other people.
I need a drink. I have learned that you don't necessarily need a villain to create a comprehensive, entertaining story. Because Gaston isn't as, like, he's not a monster.
No, he's pretty sexy, really.
Yeah, he's just a dude. She made the wrong choice.
Yeah, like
she would have been so bored living
land.
With him.
Well,
did he though?
There's
they
a
never
hub.
State that he.
There
he
is
doesn't own the pub. He just apparently runs the pub.
There is a whole BuzzFeed article. I think you'll enjoy, Julie.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
I
it's BuzzFeed,
it to you, didn't I?
That is like it says that Gaston would have been better due to that particular
yeah.
period in French
yeah.
like Revolution.
Yeah. Oh
and
yeah,
Renaissance.
Yeah. Everyone in the castle got killed.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
had
yeah.
no
yeah.
dowry.
Yeah.
She would have had nothing to offer. Marriage-wise, he had everything to offer.
He did.
I'm upset discussing this because I don't like what I'm talking about right now. But yeah, in that time period, that would have been he would have been the appropriate choice.
He did own the tavern because he decorated it himself.
Just because he decorated it didn't mean that he was an interior designer or any kind of weird name.
We learned
leasing.
Is it okay if I put nails up or do I need to put
the
sticky tack thing stickers, and then put the yeah. antlers on top of that?
That's right.
We
had to
learned
check with the landlord.
That Gaston could be a man of many traits.
Loved the fact that the movie cited him as coming home from war.
Yes.
That was appropriate for me. It was also very era appropriate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made a lot of sense, and it played so much into his character and the fact that LeFou was smarter than him but was always kind of following him around to make sure that he didn't get killed or
yeah.
didn't do anything super stupid.
Yeah.
So I did like that aspect of the movie. Musical movie.
Yeah.
I learned. Which you also should not watch.
That I perhaps need to be trapped in a castle and held captive. Because the meaning of Stockholm Syndrome, true love.
I was going to say, so Stockholm Syndrome is a real thing and it works for everyone. Magic!
Actually, it worked for Belle. I don't know that it works for everyone.
M. Night Shyamalan just used it in his last movie, too.
Oh, dear.
In all seriousness, I think one lesson I do take from this, and this does not just come from one character, is be careful what you wish for.
Yes. Mm. But also be true, I guess, to who you are in terms of Belle, but maybe not necessarily to the Beast. Like,
well, no,
be open-minded and be accepting and all that jazz.
I think that you're... I do agree with that idea of be true to who you are because, I mean, even Gaston was putting on a bravado to a certain degree, but who the hell knows who he really is in comparison. But I would agree with that. Don't be a jerk. I think we can all agree is the general lesson is don't be a jerk.
Especially don't be a jerk to enchantresses.
Yeah.
If they're trying to come out of the cold.
Let all of those people into your home.
When someone comes up to you with a flower and they have a hello, my name is Enchantress badge.
Yeah, just let them in. They get the free range of the kitchen.
They can do what they want.
The master bedroom, it's all yours.
Commode. All yours.
Come on.
You want an ensuite? I'll build it. An ensuite.
There's a little bit of your actions have consequences throughout all of that as well. So,
well, even Belle's actions had consequences. Maurice's actions had consequences.
And your inaction has consequences. The reason she put a curse on the whole castle was because they stood by and they watched him become this awful human being.
And doesn't that just lead to passion? The fact that she laid this curse on them, isn't that just her, like, if the Enchantress's fury?
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't exactly think that through, so her actions had consequences as well?
Yeah.
All of the actions.
I think she overreacted just a little. Maybe a little bit. But
and in
you
the
needed,
book,
needed to set up the story, so.
Yes.
And in the book that I mentioned before, they delve into that idea that maybe what she did was a bit too extreme.
A bit much.
Just a bit much. Touch much.
So... calm it down a little, enchantresses of the world. And
yeah, extra.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap this up and say our goodbyes. Aww. Are you ready? It's time to say goodbye, Ray.
No, we don't want to go.
We can't talk about Beauty and the Beast anymore.
It's been six hours.
It has been a long episode, so welcome to another episode hosted by Miranda Selwood. For some reason, the ones that I lead
this
on
is Beauty
are always
and the Beast
long.
Part eight.
I'm sorry. We just like to talk. But Ray, tell us what's going on in the world of you.
I'm going to start that over again because I hate the fact that I started with actually four times in a row. I am going to be putting on my cabaret show, Ruby Slipper Chronicles, out in Adelaide in a couple weeks.
Adelaide.
Just briefly, Ruby Slipper Chronicles, because you're from Kansas City.
Yes.
And you moved to the land of Oz.
During a tornado.
In the middle of a tornado.
my plane was almost grounded. And I thought to myself, well, that seems weird. And didn't, you know, put too much more effort into that because I was moving to an entirely different country where I knew two people. And I thought, my God, what am I doing? My God. Then I got here and my story, my life story seemed to follow a very familiar path.
It was when you got here and then you met a scarecrow and it started talking to you.
And I was like, I didn't know they did that here in Australia. And also he was saying things like, sweet as, and have an arvo in the arvo. And I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, nah. It's very good. I've seen it.
Thanks, KB.
And I think people should go see
it. Check's in the mail.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I need to eat this week. I'm not going to ruin it for anyone, but you do a rendition of a song that you've heard a million times before. And for me, I would hear you sing that every day for the rest of my life.
Sure.
I've never heard it sung in that way.
All your checks are in the mail. Yeah. You're the best ever. I am very excited to do this, and I've been meaning to bring it out to Adelaide and very, very, very excited to do so. I wasn't sure how long it would take for me to have this opportunity to take it to the Adelaide Fringe Festival. And it's going to be the 15th, 16th, and 17th. So just after Valentine's Day, get those Valentine's Day couples tickets now. And it's going to be at the A Club in Adelaide. And right after that, I come home and I am reprising my role as Madame Peacock in Cluedo, done by the Brisbane Immersive Ensemble, which was an absolute blast the last time I did it. Also with Zane Weber as our Colonel Mustard. And I'm super jazzed.
Cluedo isn't just a show, it's the game. It's interactive. The audience actually has to figure it out.
So
it's a different murderer every time.
Each night is a different, we are told, okay, so we do a lot of practicing for the scene, the quote unquote scenes and the show. But what happens is you as the audience, you walk in to Dr. Black. I have to remember who the character names are because they're different where I'm from. Dr. Black's party. You are invited. A lot of people show up in full costume. They love to dress up for this as well.
Yeah.
And you're walking around just kind of enjoying the party. At a certain point, you start to hear conversations, and we do them a little bit loudly because these are scenes, but they're in certain rooms. This is not a show where we are on stage and you are in the audience. You are essentially eavesdropping on conversations. And you get to interact with us as the characters, as Madame Peacock and Colonel Mustard and Reverend Green and Dr. Black, as the characters, we are essentially having conversations with you as those characters. If you want to know any more information, you can kind of sneak those little tidbits just by talking to us in between the quote unquote scenes that we have. And then at a certain point, Dr. Black dies. Is murdered, and then you get to interview us with the help of some assistance. Yeah, it's like playing Cluedo, only actually talking to the characters as opposed to playing it on a board game.
Yeah, because who needs a board? Anyway, when can we see Cluedo?
It starts April 4th. We have our first preview. And then it runs basically through the weekends until April 27th. And then it starts up again in May and runs the weekends until May 25th. So you'll have to go to the website, look up Brisbane Immersive Ensemble online on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And they will have all of the information, all of the ticket pricing. It's at Baedeker, which is a wine bar. Fantastic, which means you're going to be drinking while you're playing. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
So those are the Brisbane dates, but keep your ear out. Cluedo may be on the move.
Yes, there is a lot of chatter happening, and I can't confirm anything, of course, but
if you're not in Brisbane, you might still get a chance.
There is a solid possibility. There's a very solid possibility that you will be getting Cluedo coming to your town soon. By the end of 2019, for a guarantee.
And of course, the other thing you have going on, which is going to travel Australia over the next year or so, is your beautiful portrayal of Glinda the Good Witch, in The Wizard of Oz, the Arena Spectacular. So there are all the things you can check out and find Aurelie Roke in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be looking forward to having you back on the show to talk another show.
There is one more thing that I have not mentioned.
Oh my.
What?
I'm choreographing the 24-hour musical here in Brisbane.
The 24-hour what?
That is the... What? Which will be happening April 15th. Is that right?
13th and 14th. 13th and 14th.
That was close enough. Yeah, same but different.
We'll all be asleep on the 15th.
I get there the day after. I'm like, I'm ready. Let's teach the... Oh, and they're already gone.
You'll hear a lot more about 24-hour musical project over the coming weeks. So keep an ear out. And of course, check out our website at www.24hmp.com. If you want to find Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, we have a website. That's not canonproductions.com is the home of all of the network's many, many podcasts, including ours at //MTMEIK. There's not three slashes, just pick one.
Preferably the forward slash.
Search our full name on Facebook, on Twitter, we're at Musicals Teach Me. You can send Julie an email at musicalstaughtmepodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear more about your casting ideas for Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And, of course, any of the other shows that we talk about. If there's something you want us to cover, send us a message on any of those platforms, mm-hmm. and let us know, because we want to cover the shows that you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Rate, subscribe, review, do all of those things, and become a patron.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, be a patron, yes, of the arts, please. On patreon.com/musicalstaughtme, everything I know. Chuck us a couple of bucks a month and you can have access to top five lists made exclusively for Patreons only.
And
but most importantly, the Cats episode is yours to listen to
Zane will dance, Miranda, as many times as you like.
If we get enough Patreons,
Zane will dance.
Zane will do the Necronomicon and
it's
various
only a,
other
a matter
things.
Of time.
It is only a matter of time.
Literally only a matter of time.
And someone's
rapping. I'm
going to
put $20,000 towards just you dancing the Necronomicon.
Oh, yeah.
I need the Necronomicon in my life. And I need Zane Weber to do it.
Well, the great news is, Ray, you don't need to pay $20,000. You can just a couple of dollars. One US dollar.
If I give one US dollar every day, can I can I get it by the end of the year?
Well, done. Get 900 of your friends
get going. But you know what? You should also just be a patron to the arts period.
Absolutely.
As on top of that, also be a patron. Be a patron, but also be a patron. Get out there, go see shows. Go see cabarets, go listen to bands, go talk to the producers and the writers and the artists. Just get out there. Get off your bums. Let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
And on that note, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you
to my co-hosts.
Julie Eisentrager.
KB.
My name is Miranda Selwood, and we will see you next week for another musical.
Bye.
Bye. Peace.
Objectively be bad?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we can't learn from it. I'm Alex Smith.
And I'm James Keogh.
And on our new podcast, My Songs Suck, we talk to writers and musicians who share with us some of their earlier, less good content and reflect on how far they've come.
If you want to get in on the fun, head to That's Not Canon Productions or find us on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcatcher you use.
My Songs Suck, because everyone makes mistakes.
Just make sure you record them.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.